Good morning everybody, I'm Simon Ward of 3D Fitness. It's Friday the 17th of September and today is a historic day because this is the first of what will become a regular feature, my podcast. Now the podcast content is going to be made up of information that I think you guys need to hear in order to live a fitter, leaner, faster, healthier and happier lifestyle. The content can be dictated by you. If you've got things you want me to answer, please send me the questions through and I'll do my very best to provide you with that info. I'll also be picking up stuff that's in the media. I'll be picking up on stuff that's topical. And let's just freestyle it. Let's see where we go with it. But if we're good and we get lots of listeners, then hopefully we'll be able to get it up onto iTunes so the whole world can listen. So you can say you were in there on the first one. So let's get started. In a couple of weeks' time, we've got our local triathlon. For those of you who live near Leeds, you might be familiar with the Ilkley Triathlon. It's quite a big event if you're a novice. We get about 300 competitors. It fills up very, very quickly. And this year, I've got 8 people who either come to the gym here or are connected with clients that come to the gym who are doing the triathlon. It's for each of them, it's their very first event, and I've had lots and lots of questions from them about how do I get started in this time and what sort of training shall I do? Am I going to be able to finish it? So I thought that the first subject that we could talk about today was how do you get started in a triathlon? Well, before we start, let's talk about what a triathlon is. Generally, it involves 3 sports, and they're generally in the following order: swim, bike, and run. You may have seen on Sky Sports or Eurosport the Ironman triathlons. Now, that is still a triathlon. It's still swim, bike, and run, but it's got distances of 2.5 miles of swimming, 112 miles of cycling, and 26 miles of running. Before you stop there, you don't have to do those distances. The Ilkley Triathlon is perfect for first-timers. It's got a 400-metre swim in the pool. Actually, I think it's 500 metres. It's got a 9-mile cycle ride, 3 loops of a 3-mile course, and then a 3-mile run on the same course that you do the cycling on. It takes the winners just under an hour. I think our slowest time last year was just under 2 hours, so... it's an endurance event. It's a lot of fun. Triathlon takes place in the summer, so generally you're competing in good weather, and it's a perfect lifestyle sport, which is why I've made a career out of triathlon coaching and triathlon training, because it's just such a perfect job to go with a lifestyle. So let's say you want to enter a triathlon next year. What do you need to do? Well, you do need to be able to swim, of course, but you don't need to be able to swim freestyle. There'll be a lot of people at the Ilkley Triathlon who are completing the swim part of the event, doing breaststroke fully or breaststroke partly and mixed in with front crawl. But you do need to be able to swim 500 metres pretty much non-stop. If you give yourself 12 weeks, I think you could probably go from at least being comfortable in the water to actually building endurance to finish that sort of event and that sort of distance. So, it's the thing that most triathletes find difficult. It's the one we get asked about coaching for most. But it's this also the smallest portion of the race. So once the swim's over, then you're out onto the bike. Do you need to buy an expensive bike? Well, no, you don't. Again, at Ilkley, there'll be people completing these bikes on the bike part on mountain bikes. I think there's some photographs on the website of people even completing them in a shopping bike with a shopping basket on the front. Of course, there'll be guys that turn up with a disc wheel and a triathlon bike that's cost them several thousand pounds, but they've been probably competing in the sport for a while and decide that it's worth that sort of investment. So as long as you've got a bike, as long as you can ride the bike, and as long as you've got enough endurance to ride 5 or 10 miles, then you should be okay. But there is one thing you must do. Always wear a helmet when you ride your bike. The races insist on it. In fact, if you don't have a helmet, you won't be allowed to compete. And it's just so sensible to wear a helmet, or so stupid not to wear one. I can't be more vocal about this. there's a lot of accidents that occur at high speed, and yeah, if you get hit by a car, a helmet probably isn't going to save you much, but there's also a lot of accidents that people have when they fall off at high speed, and then a helmet will definitely help you to avoid serious head injuries. So always be wearing that helmet when you go out on your bike, and get into it as a matter of habit so that you're used to it on race day. Okay, the final part of the triathlon then is the run. You will find that people are running this, you will find that some people walk it, and you will find that some people run and walk. As long as you can cover 3 miles on foot, then you've got a good chance of completing the triathlon. How do you get started? Well, I would say that given that the swim is the thing that most people struggle with, the first task you should have is to make sure you can swim properly. There's plenty of places you can get lessons at your local swimming pool. These days, most towns have a triathlon club, so if you feel that you're a reasonably competent swimmer, drop in at your local tri club, find out when the swim sessions are, and then just you've got to get straight into it and swim. You know, there's only one way to get started, and that's to get started. So start the swimming straight away. It's a great fitness activity anyway, and it puts a lot less stress on your body than some of the other things. I would say that if you can train every other day during a week, so maybe 3 or 4 times a week, doing once in each sport, maybe swimming 500 to 1,000 metres, cycling at the weekend, and maybe getting a little run in during the week, perhaps when you go to the gym, then if you could do that for 12 weeks, you would definitely build enough fitness to be able to complete the event. It depends what your goals are. If you want to finish this event setting a stellar time, then obviously you'll have to put in more work. Maybe you'll have to train 6 days a week. Maybe you can swim Monday, bike Tuesday, run Wednesday, swim Thursday, bike Friday, run Saturday, and have a day off on Sunday. You can alter it to suit your own lifestyle, and if you want to do more of the training on a weekend, that's absolutely fine. There's no hard and fast rule about this, but there is one key aspect, is that triathlon's an endurance sport, and you need to build up the endurance in order to be able to complete the event. I do have a little training program that I created for guys at the Oakley Tri, and if you really do want to start your first triathlon, then please drop me a line. I'll be happy to send you the program, and you can have a go at it, and maybe you can enter your next triathlon next year. But it's a great sport, and we talked about Ironman at the beginning, and you'll find that a lot of people that started off in this race have progressed, and some of them probably are doing Ironman now. They always say that they're never going to get to that level when they finish their first try, but as soon as they get home and look at the results, they start thinking, what can I do next year, what's bigger and better? And of course, there's nothing really too much bigger and better than completing an Ironman triathlon. Perhaps we'll talk about that in a future podcast. So if you want to do a triathlon, find out where there's one near to you, make the commitment, enter the race. You've got a burning platform there, and that will sort of motivate you, maybe even force you into doing training on a regular basis. But it's if you take a look at the people that are doing the events, they're no different to you, apart from the fact that a little bit more motivation to get training. So get out and do it, man, and have a good time. Okay, so moving on to something completely different now then. One question I get asked a lot, it's usually a question that comes from our male clients, and usually in the magazines you see the men wanting to know this more than the women, is how do I get a six-pack quickly? The truth is that you really can't get a six-pack quickly. The body only responds at a certain rate. To be quite honest, a lot of people have already got a six-pack. It's just that it's got a lot of wrapping paper on and you can't see it. Whether you actually have the muscles that are arranged in small blocks that so that it makes it look like a chocolate bar, you know, a Cadbury's chocolate bar, is purely down to genetics. You can develop the muscle, and obviously when you see people doing thousands of sit-ups and lots of stomach exercises in the gym, they are trying to build up the muscle. But you must be under no illusion that when you work a muscle hard and regularly, that the muscle will grow. So actually, when you do all of this work, you are really going to end up with a bigger waist. Stomach exercises will not make your waist smaller. Now, if you burn the body fat, that's two things are going to happen. One, the waist will get smaller because there's less packaging around it, less padding. Okay, you'll also be able to see the stomach muscles more visibly because there will be less padding around them. But the actual girth of the muscle will grow if you continue to do regular stomach exercises. So if you're not going to do anything about your diet and you're going to do 1,000 sit-ups a day and 1,000 oblique crunches and 1,000 leg raises, all that's going to happen is the muscle's going to expand underneath the fat that you've got around your waistline, and you will just look a bit thick around the midsection. You'll need to let your belt out one notch and you'll need to get a thicker, bigger pair of trousers. So how long is it going to take to lose to show the six pack? Well, that really depends on how much body fat you've got to lose. I would suggest that you can probably lose a couple of pounds a week, so that's a kilo. Be aware though that the stomach and the midsection is the area where most men generally tend to gain weight first, and so when you're losing weight, it will also be the last place where it comes off. You'll probably notice if you start watching your nutrition a bit more carefully that the weight will drop off your face first. You'll be a little thinner around the jaw, your cheekbones will show up, you'll maybe look a bit more defined on your arms and on your legs, and eventually you will be losing some fat off your stomach, but the last place where it will really go is around the stomach muscle. So it's going to take some time. How long really depends on what you're starting off with, how much you've got to lose, and also how diligent you are with your nutrition. And when you see the guys in Men's Health and Men's Fitness and in some of the other fitness magazines, make no mistake, these guys are very, very disciplined when it comes to nutrition. Most of them don't drink beer. Most of them won't be eating chocolate and biscuits. But they will be eating lots of lean chicken, lots of fish. They'll work out very, very hard. And they lead quite an abstemious lifestyle. So, you know, if you like going to the pub, if you like sinking the pints, if you like a kebab on the way home, like your takeaways, that's great. But you're going to have to set aside those things if you want to have a six-pack. And the truth is, you probably can't have both, at least not for very long. So I hope that's helped a little bit. I will be putting a program together about how to get a six-pack and how to finally be able to demonstrate exactly what you've got underneath all of that padding. But you've got to be under no illusions. It's hard work. Okay, well, we talked about dieting there. And one question I got asked recently by somebody was, how do I keep my motivation when I'm dieting? The person in question said that they managed to get to a couple of weeks. They'd lost a few pounds and then it all seemed to fall apart and they'd fall back into the ways. And I think that's probably something that a lot of people experience. So how do you keep your motivation in dieting? Well, I think the first thing is you've got to decide what is your goal. Now, we talked about the six pack there. If your goal is to have a really visible six pack when you're in a pair of shorts or you know, in your swim trunks, then that's great. If you want to get into that little black dress for the party, if you want to be able to get into a suit for your wedding, whatever it is, you've got to have an idea of what your end goal is. If possible, take a photograph of exactly what it is you want to be wearing. Put somebody who provides your role is your role model or provides you with an image of what you want to look like. Take that photograph and take lots of copies and pin it to everywhere that you look at regularly. Okay, so pin it to the fridge door, pin it to your mirror in your bathroom, pin it to the stick it on your steering wheel, stick it next to your PC monitor at work. Anywhere that you're going to look at regularly, you need to have a reminder of your goal. Then you need to, once you've got an idea of your goal, it's probably a good idea to get an assessment from a personal trainer. They'll be able to tell you exactly what you're going to need to do in order to get into shape. They'll be able to tell you how many pounds of fat you need to lose to see the six pack. They'll be able to tell you exactly how many inches you need to lose around your arms and your legs and your waist in order to get down to wearing that little black dress or the new suit. Or if it's a fitness goal you have, they're going to be able to tell you exactly how much training you need to do to reach that fitness level. Once you've had your assessment, you need to have a program, you need to have a plan. You've got to have a way of getting from A, which is where you are now, to B, which is where you want to be. Ideally, leave yourself plenty of time. I had a lady that came in to see me once, and she said, I need to lose 2 stone in a month because I've got a wedding to go to. How can I do that? And rather facetiously, I said, chop your leg off. She said, don't be stupid. And I said, well, you started it by asking how I could help you to drop such a large amount of weight in such a short space of time. Yeah, you do see people who've lost weight in quick time, but quite often you find that they've put that weight back on again later. So if you want long-lasting success, it's better to take your time. So 6 months to a year, it'll go very quickly once you get into it. It seems a long time now, but it's a small fraction of your life, and the investment will be worth far more than just the achievement of getting to your goal. So you've got your goal, you've got your starting position, you've got your assessment. You know you need to do what you've got to do because your trainer's given you a program. You need probably with your nutrition to cut out the stuff that's not going to contribute to health and well-being. So easy things there are cutting out alcohol, cutting out chocolates, cutting out crisps, cutting out processed foods, cutting out the things you probably already know you shouldn't eat. It doesn't mean that they have to be out of your life for good, but if you really want to stop the cravings for them, you probably need to get them out for at least a month and then maybe feed them back in so you can treat yourself once a week. So the first thing to do probably is to make a food diary. Now, it's where this lady was coming from that asked the question is, she's done all this, she's managed to get started on the program, but after 2 weeks she loses her motivation. I think that's something that everybody faces. And this is the time when you're going to have a plan B. Is what is it that's motivating me to do this in the first place? Look at the picture that you set yourself of your image and really think, do I want to get to that? Am I just dreaming or do I really want to get to that? It's hard. It's really hard. Probably when you're sitting there at night, it's about 9 o'clock, you're feeling a bit peckish, you could easily go to the cupboard and pick up a couple of biscuits or a packet of crisps. Those are the times when you've got to learn to say no and think about what you really want to achieve, because if you can't say no, then you're never going to get into the suit, the black dress, you're never going to be able to see the six pack. So find things to occupy you, find a way of saying no, find something to distract you. The cravings will get less and less and less, and eventually you'll develop a willpower that gets you there, but I think that's it. You need some discipline, you need a real focus on your long-term goal, and you need that willpower to be able to say no. Good luck. It's real difficult, but if you really want to achieve something badly, then I'm sure you can do it. Many people have. Okay, next subject then. Another question that we get asked, and one that a lot of people tell us, is they're going to start to get fit and they're going to do it by running. Now, I often wonder why people want to run. If you're a triathlete or a runner, then obviously you need to run to get fit, because that's specific to what you want to do in your event. So you have to do that in training. But if your goal is just to improve your fitness, to be a healthier person, then I actually don't think that you need to run in order to do that. Walking is one of the best exercises you can do. For starters, it's free. You can walk anywhere. You don't need any special equipment. You can walk to work in the morning. You can go for a walk at lunchtime if you are near a park, or you can even go and walk around the town streets if that's what you want to do. You can take your dog for a walk. You don't need special clothes. You can just pop straight out of the house with your shoes on, pick your jacket up, and that's you out. Generally, if you're going to run then you need to prepare to go out for a training session. You'll need proper running shoes. You need to put your running kit on. You need clothing that's quite tight fitting, that's not going to pick up too much moisture. There's a little bit more involved in going for a run. Running also has several downsides, not least of which is the fact that because at times both feet are off the ground, you have to hit the ground with an impact. That's why running is called a high impact activity. And this impact means that every time you land, approximately four times your body weight is accepted by your joints. So if you weigh 70 kilos, every time you land, there's approximately 280 kilos of force going through your ankle, your knee, your hip joints, and also your spine. Okay? If you take a step for every meter and you run 1 kilometer in 10 minutes, then that's 1,000 steps in 10 minutes. That's 6,000 steps in an hour. So 6,000 times in an hour, 280 kilos has gone through your joints. So it's no wonder that in the physio clinic here, we see people that come in with lots of running injuries. Most of the time, it's because their body isn't conditioned well enough to be able to accept that force. And so ultimately, as they build up their fitness and they start to increase the miles, something breaks down. And it's generally a calf muscle or a knee or a hip joint. And then, once you get that injury, you can't train because of the pain. So you lose your fitness and you go back to square one. Well, perhaps not all the way back to square one, but you go back a long way. And so what that means is that then you've got to start again. And one thing that the physios have realised over the years is that the most likely point of your next injury is the site of the last one. So if you've had a knee injury, because that's a weaker part of your body, it's more likely the next injury is going to be a knee problem too. Walking, on the other hand, generally tend to have one foot on the floor at all times. Therefore, it's a low impact activity. Of course, there will be stress going through the joints, but definitely not as much as when you run. You try walking hard for 45 minutes to an hour, and I can tell you, your heart rate will be elevated, your breathing will be elevated, and your body temperature will be elevated so that you're sweating. And if you did that three or four times a week, you'd be able to achieve what I consider to be a remarkable level of fitness for health. Okay? And in truth, unless you are competing in sports, what we're all after is improving our health, resisting disease, helping ourselves to live to a ripe old age. And whilst cardiovascular fitness is important, it's only one aspect of it. And so I'd suggest that, you know, if you can walk three times a week, that's great. And then try to get to the gym and do some other forms of exercise. Which brings us on to our final point. Cardio exercise versus lifting weights. Now, most females that I know that go to the gym will spend half an hour on the walking machine, they'll spend half an hour on the cross trainer, they'll do a little bit perhaps on the exercise bike, maybe they go to a spinning class, but they do a lot of CV work because they're under the misguided impression that doing that CV work burns all the calories. And yes, it does, but it's not helping to preserve muscle mass. Now, one of the reasons I get from females mostly, but definitely some males, is they don't want to lift weights because they think that they will become muscle bound. That's completely untrue. I have to tell you, I've been lifting weights since I was 16. I'm 46 now, so I've been lifting regularly for 30 years. I still weigh 78 kilos, so I'm dreaming. I weigh 78 kilos now. When I was 21, I weighed 79 kilos when I played rugby. So, despite all the years of lifting weights, my muscle mass has not increased massively. Why? Because of the amount of cardio work I do for my triathlons, and because I don't do the right sort of training. You've got to be genetically gifted to gain that muscle. You've also got to probably train 5 to 6 days a week to gain that muscle, and you've got to eat like a horse. You've also, as a female, lacking in testosterone. Men have 10 times as much testosterone as women, which is why it's easier for them to build muscle. So as a female, It's unlikely you're going to put on more than a kilo or so of muscle. And to be quite honest, if that helps you to burn the fat, then it's worth it. Lifting weights has many, many positive aspects which can influence your lifestyle, not just now, but in later life. Firstly, it helps you to maintain integrity around the joints. So that means you're less likely to get injured. Secondly, it helps you to put stress onto the bones, and that stress on the bones we know helps to take up calcium, which means that it's something that helps you to prevent osteoporosis. Lifting weights regularly will help you to maintain your strength both in your legs and crucially in your upper body. And these are things that we lose as we get older. Think about general things that you see old people lacking the ability to do. Unscrewing the top off a jam jar, lifting an object above the head at certain times in their lifestyle, maybe even getting out of a chair or out of the bath becomes difficult, and that's because people have lost strength. So lifting weights can have positive impacts not only on your lifestyle but also on your body shape. Muscle burns calories, and if you want to burn calories during an activity, do cardio work. That's fine, but as soon as you finish the cardio work, your body will return to its normal temperature, and you won't be burning those calories quite the same way. If you gain a little bit more muscle, then your body will be burning calories all the time, more calories than at the present, even while you're asleep. Now there's something I could make money out of: how to burn calories while you're asleep. So I would say, if you're going to go to the gym, by all means do cardio work. It's important to have a healthy heart and lungs, but it's important to have healthy joints and healthy muscles as well. And lifting weights should be just as much a part of your regular gym program. There's a couple of things I would advise. Firstly, it might be worth employing a personal trainer for a few sessions, just to make sure you find out which exercise is the right ones for you, and also, more importantly, how to do those exercises with the right technique so you don't get injured. And secondly, go with a partner. It gives you a bit of confidence, gives you a bit of competition to help you to help spur you on, and if somebody's going to keep you on the straight and narrow, because one of you is always going to be motivated and probably one of you is quite often going to be demotivated. So find yourself a training partner, get down the gym, get involved in some weights classes, maybe a circuit training class, but do it two or three times a week, and I guarantee that you'll have a more rounded fitness aspect for your body. You'll have a better physique as well as better cardio, and you're going to look fantastic on the beach next summer. And that's the best thing about lifting weights. You just look so much better. So, that's it. It's taken me half an hour to get through that list of content, much longer than I thought. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you've got any feedback about what you've heard today, the presentation, whether we should include a bit of music in there, whether I need to break things up a bit, whether we need to have somebody else on here, just let me know. If you've got anything that you want me to answer questions on, please send them to me. As I say, we'll be doing these podcasts regularly. They'll be available on the 3D Fitness website for you to listen to, download to your iPod. And if we get enough listeners and we get enough content going out there, then hopefully we can get onto iTunes and the whole world will be able to listen. So this is Simon Ward. It's the end of my first podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you, and I hope you join me next time. Till then, stay healthy and have fun.